Law Focus Podcast, bringing you the facts, handing you your rights. This is Law Focus.
Good evening. It's exactly 5 minutes past seven, and you're tuned into Vow FM. We're broadcasting live on 88.1. My name is Tsepo Mohapi, and I'm with Millicent Ndiweny. Now, tonight we're going to discuss forced sterilizations. In recent weeks, it's been a topic which came to the fore. Now, at least 48 women, based mainly in KZN and Gauteng, alleged that they were sterilized without giving informed consent. These women who did not know that they were being sterilized at all, so for instance, they were going under the knife to give birth via cesarean section, and the sterilization occurred then, or they were coerced into the sterilization at a time when they were extremely vulnerable, having just given birth to a child. The allegations are mainly historic, but they span a number of years, and the first complaint appears to have originated in 2001. Some of the women only realized much, much later the extent of the violation which they suffered at the hands of the medical professionals.
And the types of coercive tactics used by the medical professionals ranged from intimidating the victims by stating that the victim would die if they were not sterilized, commenting openly about the woman's HIV positive status and the number of children that the woman already had. All this was done to humiliate and intimidate the woman into submission and signing the consent form. In all these cases, the women were not given proper information about the procedure in order for them to make an informed decision, and that is what they were even told about the sterilization in the first place. The actions are a clear violation of many of the basic human rights, including the rights to dignity, to equality, and information when it comes to medical procedures, to name but a few. We will be taking this opportunity tonight to discuss what happened and what the way forward is now for these ladies, not only these ladies, but also other vulnerable people in our society who find themselves in a situation where they are being forced to sterilize, or they are just simply being sterilized without their consent. And we need to also now reflect for ourselves as a country what this means and how we are doing regarding us upholding human rights, because we see we often claim that we are, you know, human rights are the beacon of our whole dispensation in South Africa.
Yeah, that's right. Now, we always want to hear from you, and we want to hear what you want to say. Your contribution is valuable. Now, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at VowFM using the hashtag LawFocus. On Facebook, we are VowFM. And on our landline as well, which is 011-717-9881. I always look forward to hearing from you. Now, if you missed tonight's full episode, check out our podcast on wits.journalism.co.za/law or the Wits Academy page on Iona, and you can get this show as well as previous shows. But for now, let's keep you up to date with everything that's happening in the news with our legal hotspots.
Rounding up all the top stories of the week, it's Legal Hotspots.
Well, we start off with what, none other than what is on everyone's mind, on every single radio station, everywhere on the TV, and that has to do with the coronavirus. You know, there have been actually drastic measures taken in South Africa on Sunday because of this. President Cyril Ramaphosa announced from the 18th of March that South Africa's borders to all foreign nationals from countries highly impacted by the deadly coronavirus would actually be closed. So we have decided to take urgent and drastic measures to manage the disease, protect the people of our country, and reduce the impact of the disease on our society and economy. Yeah, it's very scary, hey, when you think of how people have been stocking food, when you think of how the economy especially is going to be impacted, students, matriculants who are going to be writing at the end of the year, it's so scary.
Yeah, but I mean, people are panicking.
Everyone?
Yeah, I mean, with the stockpiling situation. Stockpiling only leads to more stockpiling. It doesn't lead to people having
and the
greater
food
supplies.
Shortage.
Yeah, it just creates more of a problem. I've never seen stockpiling solve a problem. Never.
Well, we've never seen coronavirus before, right?
But we've seen other major problems, you know, and I've never seen stockpiling resolve the problem. Never. But anyway.
Terrible. So we have now declared a national state of disaster, said to the president, in a nationally broadcast address to the nation following an afternoon meeting. He did say that he announced, rather, a raft of extraordinary measures to limit the country's exposure to the virus. And these include a travel ban on foreign nationals from high-risk countries, those countries being Italy, Iran, South Korea, Germany, Spain, the United States, Britain, and China as of Wednesday this week. The cabinet also cancelled visas issued to visitors from those countries from yesterday and revoked previously granted visas. You know, when I saw this, I was thinking, shoo, how much money would a person have spent on getting a visa and it's revoked or it has been cancelled? It's so much money. It's
but
crazy.
Ordinarily, you know, there's a lot of it's refunded. There's something called force majeure in the law, which is sort of, you know, something that you can't, it's beyond your control, beyond anybody's control. And sometimes that can kick in and you can get all sorts of things.
I wonder if that would include, you know, sometimes there's all these tests that you would take before you obviously leave the country.
Yeah.
I wonder if that includes all the you know, that finance that was spent. Yeah. So effective immediately is that South Africans have been advised to refrain from all travel to and through the European Union and all other high-risk countries that have been mentioned. The government will shut down land-based ports of entry as of today, and with the two of the 8 seaports already closed. All non-essential government official travel outside of South Africa has been banned immediately. Local travel is also discouraged. Gatherings of more than 100 people will be prohibited, as will be celebrations of key national days. When I saw the 100 people one, I was thinking in particular of people who, you know, go to church religiously and how they need to find a way of worshipping in a different way so that you don't find yourself putting, you know, obviously yourself and other people at risk by overdoing, you know, the numbers.
A lot of churches have cell groups and things like that, so maybe that
they have to actually make use of that.
Yeah, maybe. Or if they don't have them, maybe think about establishing them.
Right, right. And then schools are closing on Wednesday. That's tomorrow. They are very happy. Of course, they're happy. And they will open only after Easter weekend. That's obviously if things are still the way, you know, progressing as accordingly. Prison visits, on the other hand, have been suspended immediately. And the number of cases in South Africa, last time we checked, were well over 60. I say well over 60 because whether it's 62 or whether it's 64 or 65, I'm not quite sure yet. The news reports haven't really given a number so far, but we know that it's well over 60. And then higher education institutions and churches have already cancelled graduations and other formal gatherings. So with regards to university news, what we do know is that Rhodes University has decided to cancel their graduation ceremonies scheduled for the week of April the 2nd to the 4th, and the events that may involve significant numbers of people from Makanda and beyond. The University of Fort Hare spokesperson Thandi Mabikade said on Sunday that the university was in the process of setting up a response team to deal with the virus. On a daily basis, materials on precautionary measures are shared with staff and students. Because of the numbers of infected people continuing to rise, management may introduce other steps next week. UCT has cancelled all classes and on-campus activities until the end of the Easter vacation. And then here at home, the University of the Witwatersrand has cancelled all campus activities on March the 16th and advise all students to self-isolate. isolate. Of course, you guys do know that we are the first university to have had a case of someone who was confirmed to have the virus. 350 people were in that medical class, and all of them have been asked to self-isolate. Who those 350 people might have been in contact with, we don't know. So tests have been postponed. The university has called for an early recess as of the 17th of March to the 30th of March. And then we've got the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which has about 65,000 members spread across the country. They have cancelled all worship services in line with the global church decision. It's not the only church. I think Rema Bible Church also cancelled some, or they will be finding other alternative ways of worshipping. And other churches have to obviously follow suit in line with, you know, these new measures that have been put in place by the president. We heard earlier tonight as well of a family, two of whom have tested positive for the virus. The mother and daughter tested positive but refused treatment. The father refused testing. The family left the hospital despite being cautioned not to do so, so they did not want to cooperate. And because of that, they were, you know, they had to get police to be involved.
Yeah.
And as it stands, the mother and the daughter were being taken to quarantine last time we checked, and the father was going to be taken for testing as well.
Yeah, in fact, the Department of Health in Gauteng had to approach the court on an extremely urgent basis, and the court order was granted at about 1 o'clock this morning to apprehend them. I do not understand why some people simply do not think about the well-being of others.
Yeah.
I mean, even if, I mean, I can imagine what they're going to say, that, you know, we don't want to be put into a government facility. This is probably what, we don't want to be put into a government facility, and we'd like to self-quarantine. But, I mean, if you've tested positive and you're told, listen, you must refrain from leaving this facility until such time as we clear you, it doesn't matter how uncomfortable you might be in those, uncomfortable with your presence, you know, in,
right,
in those circumstances.
If
it's bigger
issue
than you. I mean, if somebody's grand or somebody's, you know, somebody dies as a consequence of this, your uncomfortableness in being, let's say, in a government facility or being quarantined by the state means nothing, really.
Yeah, anyway. And you even seeing it from a different perspective. I'm thinking more of, sure, what if these people have some weird, maybe religious belief, and that's the reason, you know, they don't want to cooperate. It's unfortunate because now other people's lives are in danger because of that.
And we just discussed how the Church of the Latter-day Saints has cancelled all worshiping,
right,
sort of gatherings, let's put it like that.
Yeah.
And they're a fairly conservative church. I mean, from my experience with this, I don't know what on earth these people were thinking.
Yeah. Sure, yeah. I wonder if we're going to be able to sue, hey, for this coronavirus thing.
But well, they haven't named the family, and they shouldn't name the family.
They shouldn't name... No. Well, maybe not just the family, but also, you know, in terms of international law and how it would operate regarding such a pandemic, or if that's just out of the question because of how severe this matter is. I've been wondering about it, if, you know, lawsuits can be... can be brought forth. But let me just quickly conclude on our coronavirus matter. We've got Vitz, on the other hand, who we had want to oppose an urgent interdict for the evacuation by two students who have brought the matter earlier today. So Vitz had issued out some correspondence saying that everyone needs to obviously leave. Raises, you know, yesterday it was communicated 72 hours for people to leave, international students, etc. Obviously they've made measures available for all of that. So why the students have a problem, we don't know, but the university wants to interdict. So we'll see how far this matter is going
to
go.
I'm sure they'll be in court soon. All right, moving away from corona and back about 27 years ago, Chris Hani was assassinated by Janusz Walusz. Janusz Walusz is still applying for parole, and Janusz Walusz has been denied parole. He will remain behind bars for the time being. On Monday, his application for parole was denied. The minister, this is Ronald Lamola, the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services, said it is clear that the political assassination of the late Hani was executed with an intention to create chaos and mayhem in the country. The record before me clearly reveals that the trial took this fact into consideration when sentencing Janusz Walus to death. Now, the minister said the 1993 assassination was intended and had the potential to bring about a civil war within the republic at that time. And it must be noted that Janusz Walus was convicted of murder with no extenuating circumstances having found to be present. So nothing sort of to mitigate on his behalf. The court, when they sentenced him to death, they didn't find anything to mitigate by Janusz Walus' sentencing. I've also taken legal, the minister now continues saying, I've also taken, taken note of legal regime applicable based on the date in which Janusz Walus committed the crime. This implies that it should be my decision to approve his placement on parole. He would be on parole for a maximum period of 3 years unless any possible remissions which he might qualify. He continues to say that considering this fact, placing Janusz Walus on parole would negate the severity of the court sought when sentencing him. In this premise, and balancing both the negative and positive factors, the placement of parole for offender Janusz Walus is not approved at this stage. All right, so basically he's been denied, and they haven't budged. I mean, the government hasn't budged on their position. It's 27 years ago that he committed the offence, and we haven't had much information about it other than the fact that he committed it along with the now late what was that nutcase's name? What is his name again? Clive Derby Lewis. That's okay, it. Yeah, Clive Derby Lewis, former Conservative Party. All right. That concludes our legal hotspots for the week.
Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed.
Rounding up all the top stories of the week. It's legal hotspots. Law Focus on Solfeng 88.1 Point of Information.
Welcome back to Law Focus. It has just gone 22 minutes after 7, and you are with Melissa Ntibeni and Tepa Mohapi. Remember that you can communicate with us if you would like to add your comments or you want to ask any question. We're going to be talking about sterilization tonight. It is the sterilization of HIV-positive women, but forced sterilization, as well as the forced sterilization of people who are living with special needs, so people who are living with disabilities. If you want to communicate with us and engage with us on this matter, Twitter at VowFM using the hashtag LawFocus is where you can find us. Otherwise, you are more than welcome to call us on 011-717-9881. Up next, we're going to be introducing our guest. His name is Jabu Baloyi, and he comes to us from one of the most important institutions of our democracy, one of our Chapter 9 institutions. He's going to tell us more about the work that he does, and then he's going to tell us, you know, his special interest in this particular matter and how he finds himself involved in it. Thank you, Mr. Jabu Baloyi, for joining us on Law Focus. Welcome.
Thank you for having the Commission for Gender Equality, and good evening to the Betsy.
Thank you. So, how did you find yourself involved in such an important matter? Obviously, you guys, Gender Commission, you deal with a lot of important issues. How did this sterilization issue come to your fore?
How did we end up being in this situation? Is that as a Commission for Gender Equality, our mandate calls upon us to work with various institutions, including Institution of Higher Learning, Women's Institution, Men's Organization, and others, in order to build that equality in society. Then Women Legal Center sent a complaint to us that they received from their rights initiative and international women living with HIV. And they said there's something that we believe you have got the powers, you can force government and other entities to come and comply with you based on your mandate and your powers. That's where we end up being in this situation. 2015, they came to us and said we've got 48 women who are saying we were coerced into sterilization. At the time, we used the word coerced, and then we wanted to find the nitty-gritty authenticated information, and we find yes, it's within our mandate. And 2016, we started investigating, and we find ourselves in the situation. We had to hold back the report last year because we wanted to satisfy ourselves with certain aspects,
Right. And how did these women get to a point where they realized that, hey, maybe there was some forced sterilization that took place here?
I just say it was very sad how they discovered. Some would go to hospital based on something. Some would want to do a pap smear, mammogram, and other things, and ask the doctor. Some, you know, will try to conceive, wanting to have a second child, because you remember having an HIV, being HIV positive is not a deterrent for having a child.
Right.
Some were even sterilized when they were not even having, were not HIV positive or with special needs.
Right.
So that's how they started finding out. Some, and then that's where they realized something is wrong. Something was done unto them, and they wanted us to start helping. Look, I didn't consent to this. I don't know anything about it. What must we do now? I said, look, we will help as much as possible. We got consent forms, and then we started to we realized these people, some of them, you find that on the verge of giving birth, or maybe after giving birth, they were sterilized.
Mm.
Some were forced, were just given a form to say, imagine when you're disoriented, you are dehydrated, you're not feeling well, you're not in a good state of mind, someone said, sign here. And without you knowing what you're saying, and some of them couldn't even articulate themselves in the Queen's language. And that's where we realized they wouldn't have signed these things. They didn't know what they were signing for.
Mm. Right.
Mm. What did the medical practitioners, if you spoke to any, what was their reasoning for doing this?
It was, the reason, it's simple. It was plain cruelty, inhumane, unfair, and degrading way of doing things. So there's no other aspect of to justify it, because there's only one doctor now who has been found the one thing of this. What, that's the element that, you know, we want HPC, SK, and DINOSA to ensure that they take steps against all the health practitioners who did this unscrupulous,
right,
and inhumane. And you know what? You can't describe it. When you look at the faces of those women who have been forcefully sterilized, you can say every bad word against these health practitioners, because it is very bad.
Mm. Now, you mentioned the Health Practitioners Council. I've got an opinion about that council. I won't share it on air because it's very unkind. So I'm not confident about, you know, them taking any action against errant doctors. Is there another option, for example, the criminal prosecution route? Is that being explored as a possibility, for instance, SLGBH, etc.?
There's that possibility in a serious way. HPC is looking at that, and DINOSA, to look at the criminal charges. Remember, our mandate doesn't extend to a certain extent. Mm. We know some of them, they want monetary values, monetary compensation, and other things for emotional, psychological. Some of them, they've lost marriages because of forced sterilization. Mm. Some of them, they can't even tell their husband because of this forced sterilization. What HPCSA is supposed to do is what will be monitoring. What records, legal records, those who have been forced or coerced in sterilization are going to get, because we're still within our right to monitor that we have handed the report. We're still our right, because we have handed, we have even met with the Minister of Justice to ensure that, you know, they do something about it. It's not going to be a matter that is going to be left hanging. Something has to give. If it's legal records, if it's monetary compensation, HPCSA has to decide. But we've put, it's just like, you know, you put a question mark or something, knowing very well what the expected outcome you want to anticipate, you're anticipating. We anticipate that, and if that can happen, we'll be so happy for the victims. Mm. And you see them, my brother and my sister, you are going to cry.
Mm. Of course. Mm. And I'm sure, you know, despite obviously losing, let's say, your marriage or, you know, whatever it is that came with the benefits of being able to conceive, depression and, you know, other health mental issues, you know, if these women have services to help them deal with any of that trauma.
Yes, it's very. There's mental issues that that is linked to it.
Mm-hmm.
That's another aspect. All, some of them, they've never recovered. Some have died.
No.
Some, we are told someone has committed suicide.
Mm.
After she discovered, remember that it's not only dealing with the fallopian tubes. They even removed the womb altogether.
So they performed hysterectomies on some of the women.
Yes.
and they didn't tell them that this will be reversed or not. It's an irreversible procedure.
So, Mr. Baloyi, would you perhaps describe the ladies, the type of women who were subjected to this? What sort of backgrounds did they come from? Better economic community? Where were they, you know, where they come from? The rural areas?
No,
what types were being targeted?
Rural areas, urban areas. Those from Gauteng, you'll find it's women from Tembisa, it's women from Alexander, women from Soweto, certain township in Soweto. When you look at the educational background, you realize some of them, as much as they can articulate themselves, but by and large, the ones with HIV, first, and then the one with special needs, you realize these are the people that they don't have somebody fight for them in their family. These are the people who cannot understand and fathom what is it that, you know, they were subjected themselves into, some of them. So you look at it, it's like they were profiling them. Because, you know, the statement that they were saying, you HIV-AIDS people, you open your legs, you HIV-AIDS people, black babies, will show you that, will reduce that number, you will never get kids again.
That is hectic. You know,
wow.
We are in conversation with Mr. Javu Baloyi from the Commission for Gender Equality. And if you just joined us, we are talking about forced sterilization, which is something that a lot of women in South Africa we have found have gone through quite a few. I mean, it's an appalling number. One is one too many, actually, you know, in the context of our constitution, where we stand up for equality and dignity, and we believe in, you know, the values of freedom of expression, and we say we don't stigmatize, we don't discriminate under any condition whatsoever. And it's so unfortunate that these women, someone has already committed suicide, as we have heard earlier on tonight, because of this. Losing marriages, you are unable to ever conceive, even though you wanted to have a child. And it's unfortunate because, you know, with a low viral load, you can have a child who will not be HIV positive, who will be healthy, and there's absolutely no reason why we find medical professionals having done such atrocities. Although we have already spoken so much on the case, I think we should now get a little bit on, you know, explaining what we mean by sterilization, you know, for someone who is listening and they're not sure what exactly is it that we are talking about here. Is there a legal definition of sterilization and a medical definition of sterilization, or is it one and the same thing? And if so, what actually is it? What does it mean?
There's only one definition for sterilization. It is there. It's there within the act. What it's a perform sterilization. It's supposed to be done by consent legally, and medically it's supposed to be done by consent. Say, between me and my wife, we do not want to have kids all together. We have got enough kids, or we have got maybe the condition that affects.
Have we lost Mr. Javu Baloyi?
Or maybe she wants, the womb is a problem, you remove it, the womb, you sterilize her altogether, that she doesn't fall pregnant anymore. Mm. Or maybe if somebody has got a problem with ovaries, they remove the ovaries altogether because there's a problem, and then they sterilize them, and that is given with a consent, and it is counseling. A person is aware of the situation that is happening, and that person gives consent to the doctors, and also they make sure that, you know, it involves families. It's not done in a day. It's a process which, you know, also needs some guidance.
Right.
Should they not want, at times when you sterilize, because now of late, because of the medical improvement in our health system, you find that, you know, they can also maybe close the fallopian tubes, that, you know, you do not conceive at all. But if you want to reverse the process, yes, it can be done. It's sterilized, that, you know, you don't have kids, but, you know, you know yourself, between you and your partner, or yourself as an individual, as a woman, to say, look, I need you to cross the fallopian tubes at still a certain stage, can we, you hold on? And that is sterilization. It's done with consent, it's there legally, and the health practitioners did not follow, and that we must emphasize, did not follow that code when they did this forced sterilization.
Right.
So there's only one sterilization procedure that can be performed.
Right. I want to ask you, just for clarity's sake, let's just assume somebody can't give consent, but a sterilization is, or a medical procedure is recommended by the doctor, but the patient can't give consent. Doesn't matter. Maybe it's sterilization. Maybe it is, maybe there is some sort of, let's say, cancer, but it's in the reproductive organs, let's say, right? And that patient, maybe they're mentally not able to give consent. They're unconscious, something like that. So consent is not possible, but medical advice is we should perform this procedure. What would, under those circumstances where you can't get consent, what would the process be? Would it be a court process? What would it be?
There's something called guardianship in the court process.
Okay.
If that person is unable to, it would look at the law. What is the best? It is the best interest of the patient who is mentally disturbed or mentally not functioning well.
Mm.
No one is an island. There's someone within the family who can give consent for that to happen, because it can't be done in a manner like, unless otherwise it's life threatening.
Right. Oh, so in an emergency situation.
Emergency situation.
Okay.
Doctors can use that both of theirs to say, look, we are using this system now, and we are forced by the doctors to do it. That is the best way to do it. Unless otherwise, because there's no situation which is urgent in sterilization, you need to get consent, whether it's from family or from the court, to explain the situation. That should have been happening in some of the situations, but they didn't follow that. They decided to belong unto themselves. Hence, we follow this very critically.
Mm. Are we finding that, because it sounds like it's a complicated process, are we finding that it is more the support staff, say nurses, anaesthetists, all of those? Well, anaesthetist is not a support staff, but is it sort of nurses who are more involved in this forced sterilization, or is it the actual doctors, surgeons who are more involved?
Both. Nurses and doctors. As you know, after we launched the report on the 24th of February, we are receiving calls all throughout the country. This has happened to me, but I want to remain anonymous. This has happened to me. Can the Gender Commission assist me to approach HPCSA? If someone will say, I know the doctor, I can show the doctor free. I know the doctor who did this to me. I even asked what happened to me. They said nothing after what happened, because I could see there was something wrong.
Mm.
And they said nothing, go home. But when I came back to be checked, because, you know, I was feeling pain underneath my stomach, and the other doctor told me, did you do for sterilization? She said no. But she said, but here it has happened. So it's doctors and nurses combined. And on the 24th, we brought in HPCSA, Dr. Letlape. We brought in Ginosa, the top brass of Ginosa, to come and deal with these issues, to come and hear for themselves the pain and the anguish and the agony of the women who were forcefully sterilized.
Forced to go through this, and I want to know, did they keep records of their procedures, or did they even falsify those records? Does it go further than the act itself, but also now towards fraudulent covering up, etc., or were the records accessible quite easily to the Gender Commission?
You know, I'm glad you've asked that question.
Yeah.
We're dealing with unscrupulous people.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, the record keeping system within the hospital, it's a mess.
Mm.
And somewhere it was even difficult for us to access the records. We'll get some records here and there, and when they realized what we're there for, and then there was a backlash of some sort, or maybe not cooperative. So the records somewhere were falsified. There was no records, and they would even. Like, even the senior management, they will even claim that they didn't know what was happening.
Mm.
But when the report comes out, someone said, you know, we suspected something was happening.
Oh, wow.
That's how the human nature is. Nobody wants to take responsibility when something's wrong. But when something is positive, everyone wants to raise their hand. No, I was part of that reset. I was part of that because you put the dreams that came. But now, because it's something so agonizing, so shameful to the country and to the health fraternity, no one wants to say, no, we knew, but we're trying to do this, and no one is justifying it.
Mm.
But, you know, they're running for cover, all of them. Some are following the commission. Look, we know when we thought it was what the best interest. But we don't want to hear it. We had an opportunity to give valid reasons why you did it. So hence, we're coming to you with the full might and full force, ensure that, you know, there's justice for this woman. protected when they're supposed to be protected. It's discrimination, it's access, the violation of their rights and their human dignity. And the Constitution should protect them, hence we have the commission to protect them.
All right, now. So, I mean, it must have been an extremely difficult to try and trace back what happened. Listen, if you've just joined us, we are discussing the forced sterilization of women in South Africa, which happened over a number of years, but the report has recently been released about it, and action is now perhaps imminent against the various parties who were involved. Your participation in this conversation is really vital to us, so you can take part on Twitter at VowFM using the hashtag LawFocus. You can call us on 011-717-9881. It's exactly 41 minutes past 7 o'clock, and we'll be back in a few minutes after this short break.
LawFocus, point of information.
Welcome back to Law Focus. It's Millicent Ndiweni and Tepo Mohapi right here talking about sterilization with Mr. Javu Baloyi from the Commission for Gender Equality. And so far we have discussed points particularly of the sterilization of HIV positive women, although he has actually clarified that it wasn't even just HIV positive women who were sterilized. It was also women who did not even have any, any condition. Women who were not without, who did not have any disability. And either way, whether they did have it or not, it would still be wrong. And we need to find out, Mr. Baloyi, well, is it just women who have been forced into sterilization? And if it's just women, why has it just been women being targeted?
I didn't hear that one at all.
Has it just been women who have been targeted with regards to this forced sterilization by state hospitals?
No, it's only women. As far, we have been had a situation where men came out to say, look, there's something that will affect me on them. We only had women, and there's also one woman who was not an HIV positive, but she was forcefully sterilized. She has become a face of this. Her case is very far. She's sitting with the HPCSA and Department of Health for recourse, and it looks like it's going very well. And the other people also, there's one lady who managed to get the doctor having a his license revoked. Okay. So it's only women so far that we know. But there are three women that are not from poor backgrounds, who have got the resources, who are also very much educated, who were forcefully sterilized without them knowing. Because, you know, they find themselves disoriented at one of the procedures. And then somewhere, one of the unscrupulous doctors did their sterilization on them. But one of them managed to fight the battle and had the doctor disbarred from the medical practice, and one is seeking financial compensation that trying to mitigate that now with the Department of Health and HPCSA. And we hope this will be a breakthrough. If it should be a breakthrough, it will be a breakthrough for other women who were sterilized because of special needs and because of HIV.
That's right. And I mean, the finances, who pays for all this? Is it the state money that's going to be paying for, you know, that pays for all the sterilization? Is that not a problem? Is it not a waste of money? Is it not a wasteful expenditure?
It's a wasteful expenditure on its own. Hence, the HPCA was so furious. Even when you look at their Twitter page, they keep on calling people to come forward. They keep on asking them to give them information. Yet we have given them the report. It's a waste of resources.
We are losing you.
Mr. Buller, would you move around a little bit, because your line is now is not as clear as it used to be. Can you move around a bit? Hello?
Okay.
Hello, Mr. Buller? All right, I think it seems like our line just went a bit bad there. But we are seeing what the sort of challenges that exist and that they've had to face, you know, where you almost have to imagine having to reconstruct a file, a medical file, which is almost 20 years old, 15 years old, and some of the people involved might not still work there. You've only got the say-so of your complainant, who says, this is what has happened to me, and now you have to try and trace it back. Of course, you can see the result because the person, you know, has, you know, they can be examined, and you can see that, oh, but they've suffered some sort of surgery there. But you can't really go too much further back. So, I mean, it must be an incredibly difficult...
It's awful.
I didn't understand why it took such a long time, but taking into consideration the amount of time that had passed between when the sterilizations happened and when they were, you know, the investigation was launched, in excess of 10 years. And yeah, it's a very good job that they've done.
Look at medical negligence claims generally, it's so difficult, difficult to get what you need, hospital files from the hospitals, any information from the hospital. It is so hard. It's not easy.
But medical negligence is one thing. This is not
negligence. This is beyond, beyond negligence.
This is criminal, criminal behavior.
Absolutely.
All right, Mr. Abello, are you back?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, great. We just lost you there for a second. Tell us, we pride ourselves in South Africa in having perhaps some of the most progressive laws in the world when it comes to equality, dignity. We have got a great celebrated constitution. What does this do to the fabric, and are we really that honest about where we are as a country? If something like this can happen, and not only that it can happen to a few dozen women, and that it has taken so long for them to come forward because they were afraid. Are we as honest with ourselves as what we should be?
I don't think so. You know what, we have got these wonderful laws in the country. However, when it comes to implementation and protection of people's rights, we're still lagging behind. And that is a worrisome thing, and it's something that we have discovered in this case, that we talk, but nobody wants to take responsibility. Remember, even if you look at the Department of Health in Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, they're being so devious for medical negligence every year.
Yeah, left, right, and center. Yeah, that one is true.
Because someone wants, it's being negligent on purpose. This for sterilization, it's on purpose. So suppose what we have done as a commission, look, remember life should be made. We suspect, because this is a matter of David versus Goliath. You're talking about the less empowered people, less that who are not okay with the law, and versus somebody who has gone to medical school, who is a nursing practitioner, which is the health sister, and somebody who can't even maybe articulate things in the manner in which, you know, someone can understand them, like I do, you and I would do. So it's a worrying thing. How many people have gone through that process? How many people were given Panadols in hospitals because of them not understanding or able to say what is it that they are feeling in their body? So those are some of the things that, you know, the country and the health. One of the elements we have recommended, that there's supposed to be reschooling of everyone in terms of the laws and other nitty-gritties, because when you're a medical practitioner, you're supposed to understand the law side of things. What will be the recourse? Hence, you will see a situation whereby doctors are sued in the individual capacity going forward because of negligence.
You know, there's something, there's something that I don't get. Of course, as people, we all have our biases and prejudices about certain things. But I really struggle with this particular thought that I've been having for a while now. You would think that someone who has been oppressed would understand the oppression of another person. So if I have to give an example, you would think that black people would understand the oppression of other black people because we've all, you know, suffered racism or colonialism. You'd think that a woman would understand the pain of another woman because, you know, she has also experienced patriarchy, for instance. You would think that someone who has been poor would understand when we've got foreign migrants coming into a country trying to make a living because they, you know, they come from circumstances of poverty themselves, you know, those kind of things. But it's so difficult. Sometimes we find ourselves instead of me being the one who must support another woman, for instance, I'm the first one to say, no, she deserves it, or whatever nasty, negative things, you know, I would say, I don't see, I lack empathy. Now, when we deal with issues like this, I mean, I didn't ask, you know, what the nature of whether it's the race or the gender of the medical staff who have been perpetrating these issues. But either way, if most of us have been through some kind of issues of oppression, because, you know, not everyone comes from an extremely privileged background anyway, how are we supposed to read into that when we lack empathy as people who have been oppressed before and should be the ones showing it the most?
I'm telling you what you have said, as you think it's a wonderful comment that you have said. We need to look introspect as men, as people of this country, as citizens, to say why are we doing such a thing, atrocious thing to the other fellow human being? Why? Because we don't know now how many were women, how many were men as doctors, as health practitioners. We'll find out, because the truth somehow will have to get out. Because some of these people, they know which hospital they to have done and the dates and stuff like that. Some we have got records. We managed to uncover those records. So it is very bad, and it is very saddening. It's worrisome that, you know, we do this injustice to another fellow citizen, and we say we've got a progressive constitution. Yet, you know, it's just we don't follow that. So had we're not oppressive to one another, had we not applied a hypocritic oath on these people, it would have been better off. So it's a worrying trend. Even when I talk to you now, Tato, and my brother, it's sad, because it reminds me of the tears that I've seen on these women, or when we launched this report. I saw them, some of them, for the first time. Some of them, I'm in touch with them. And it's so sad, you know, when they tell this gory stuff that, you know, you wish it doesn't even happen to your worst enemy, you do have one.
Right. All right, Mr. Bolle, thank you for discussing this with us. We're running out of time now, so we're going to close.
Thank you for having us.
But we'd like you just to tell our guests where it is they can get hold of the Gender Commission, more or less what it is that they can complain about to the Gender Commission.
They can go to our website, www.cge.org.za. They can use our toll-free number, 0800-07709. They can also use this info@cge.org.za, or go to Voice of Vets and get my number from there, because we work with Voice of Vets, and get my numbers, and then I'll see that we've got 9 provincial offices, we've got lawyers throughout the country who can assist, and then we work with everyone in the country.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Baloyi. We appreciate your time. Thank you, and good night.
You're welcome.
Well, that was a very, very, very stimulating conversation, and perhaps a moving one as well.
Yeah.
It's 26 years into our democracy, and yet we still have these kinds of problems. I didn't think this was a real possibility.
It's prevalent,
in Africa. It's not just from a legal or even a heuristic point of view where we're talking about rights and human rights, and that is, you know, that's important, but we always talk about Ubuntu as a people, and yay, although many South Africans do have it, there are enough of us out here who don't, and it shows. It shows in our levels of crime, sometimes the way in which crimes are committed, and the manner in which the most vulnerable of our country are treated, and it's not with any compassion often.
Right.
They're treated almost as an inconvenience.
Absolutely,
to be gotten rid of.
Yeah, absolutely. If you would like to catch this show, you can visit vits.journalism.co.za/law. You may also go to Iono, and that's where you will get our podcast. We had Mr. Jabu Baloyi from the Commission for Gender Equality who joined us tonight on the evening, and he is the one who was our guest tonight. From our producer, Lerato Makate, our technical producer, he's back, Kutano Sirame, and from our law-focused researchers, Tepo Mohapi, Obakeng Ramari, as well as myself, Millicent Ndiweni, thank you for tuning into Law Focus tonight. Good night.
Law Focus, handing you your rights.
Law Focus Podcast.